love America.
For Talk Radio News Service, I'm Jeff Holtzman. President Obama is not yet ready to fire Kathleen Sebelius. Despite the lame rollout of the Federal Insurance Exchange website, the president is sticking by his Health and Human Services Secretary. That, according to White House Press Secretary Jay Carney.
The secretary does have the full confidence of the president.
Over the weekend, Carney's predecessor Robert Gibbs said that he hopes, quote, they fire some people that were in charge of making sure that this thing was supposed to work. Carney, however, said that the website's problems, which experts say are mostly rooted in bad coding, will be fixed, although he did not say how long it would take. On an unrelated issue, Carney said that the White House and congressional leaders are still not close on a deal to extend the nation's debt limit.
We're encouraged by the progress that we've seen, but we're far from a deal at this point.
The Treasury Department has warned Congress that its borrowing authority will expire on Thursday, at which point the agency will only have about $30 billion cash on hand to pay the bills. Jeff Holtzman.
Welcome to a Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, joined by Cliff Stewart, my co-host, and Ethel Lopez, Vice President of a Just Cause, right here on conservativenationmedia.com. First off, let's get to take care of a little bit of business. Callers, if you'd like to call into the show, your dial-in number is 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. Cliff, Ethel, how are you doing today?
Good, Sam. Good to be here. Got a lot of things going on the show.
I am excited. Thank you guys for having me again. I appreciate it.
All right. Yeah, get in front of the mic, Ethel. Hey, we got a really good lineup for tonight. We have Jay Arrington he's a staff writer with the Maryland Daily Examiner. He's going to be joining us tonight. In the second half of the program, we're going to have Jackie Sumel. She's going to tell us a little bit about Herman Wallace of the Angola 3, and we'll give a little bit of information about that. As a matter of fact, our exoneree moment this week is going to be Herman Wallace. We're also going to get caught up a little bit about the IRP 6 case. And, you know, last week on the program, we did talk a little bit about the IRP 6. We gave a very high-level overview of the IRP 6 IRP solutions. We had Duke Sherwood on the show. We had Michael B. on the show from Conservative Nation Media as well. And so we had a great show last week. This week, let's jump right into it. Cliff, you know, let's jump into the IRP 6 story. And let's bring Jay into the conversation. Jay, are you there?
Hey, Jay, are you on?
Yes, I am. You hear me?
Hey, yep. Joe. Jay, yeah, we can hear you.
Okay,
Jay Arrington with the Maryland Daily Examiner. Welcome to the program, Jay.
Thank you. Glad to be with you all.
Okay, you're going to hang out with us throughout the entire program tonight, Jay?
Yes, I am, as long as I can keep my coffee going.
All right.
Okay.
Jay, my tea.
Okay. Hey, you know, Jay, last week we talked about the IRP 6 case, and so we're going to do a little bit about that as well today. And, Jay, if you have a radio or speakers on in the background, you might want to turn them down just in case.
I'm quiet on the western front.
Okay, awesome. So, Cliff, let's dive into the story about the IRP 6 and IRP solutions. And if you can give our listeners a little bit of background on IRP solutions, and then I'll go into the IRP 6 and how that actually all got started.
Okay, sounds good. IRP Solutions is a IT software development company developing software for the federal, local, and state governments. The flagship software is named CILC, C-I-L-C is the acronym, and it stands for the Case Investigative Lifecycle. This software was being embedded by the Department of Homeland Security, the NYPD, Orange County, Florida, and several other large law enforcement companies. And this is where IRP was basically setting up to be a competitor for these large government contractors such as IBM, Lockheed Martin, Boeing, and SAIC, these large companies that create software or try to create software. In most cases, they have failed. IRP got into that space, and was being, courted by several large law enforcement agencies. Actually, Department of Homeland Security was the one that reached out to IRP Solutions about the Silk software. So that shows you the level of its viability and, how excellent that software was.
And, Cliff, IRP Solutions was started in 2003 by Gary Walker. And as you indicated, they developed the Silk software solution. There were the company was being courted by the Department of Homeland Security. You and I were actually a part of the company as well. And so we, traveled to Washington, D.C. As a matter of fact, IRP was summoned to Washington, D.C. by the Department of Homeland Security on more than one occasion. On the first occasion, I always say that Gary and David hit it out of the park. And they did a demo. In that demo was the Department of Homeland Security, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Secret Service, FBI, the Federal Air Marshals, TSA. I always refer to it as the alphabet soup of federal law enforcement. And, things were really going well until, actually it was going well. Let me just put it like that, just point blank. The Department of Homeland Security really liked what they saw. IRP Solutions went back and wanted to accommodate several requests that the Department of Homeland Security had made as far as can you modify your software to do this? Can you modify it to do that? And so Gary and David wanted to accommodate those requests. In doing so, they engaged the services of staffing companies. Now, the staffing companies are staffing companies that specialize in IT professionals, folks who write software code, folks who test software. And, the government does not close business. I mean, we all know that. The federal government does not close business as quickly as you would like. So IRP was doing business, got behind on some invoices, and you had one person to get disgruntled and basically started making threats. And I emphasize that one person because of the fact that she actually made threats about, destroying people's lives and so forth. And so, Susan Holland, and let's bring Jay in on this part of the conversation. Jay, you have written some nice articles about the IRP 6 case, and you talked about abuse of process. And Cliff, bring us in on that web of folks who are involved as far as, how allegations came about against the IRP 6.
Right, and we had spoken to Jay about this previously, that basically you have one of the staffing companies called ETI Professionals. One of their executives, Susan Holland, she had connections at the Holland & Hart Law Firm up in Denver, Colorado. At Holland & Hart Law Firm, you have one of the partners named Greg Goldberg. Well, Greg Goldberg used to be an assistant U.S. attorney up in the Denver office. And Greg Goldberg reached out to his friend, Matthew Kirsch, who is currently in the assistant U.S. attorney's office up in Denver, Colorado, and he prosecuted the case. And what we found that it's just these friends calling in favors, Susan Holland saying, hey, I'm reaching out to this Holland & Hart, probably a family law firm that she has ties to, reaching out to one of the partners there who has ties in the federal government. And this Greg Goldberg hand-delivers a package to assistant U.S. attorney Matthew Kirsch that he had compiled saying, hey, you need to go after these guys for mail fraud, for wire fraud, and conspiracy and all these crazy things, even to come up with, money laundering.
And, Jay, when we first talked to you about it and talked about this case, you decided you were going to do a multi-part series on this case. And your first part of your article is called The Curious Case of IRP 6. And under the radar is what you called it. Tell us a little bit about your article series.
Well, my article series, Sam, first of all, thank you all for having me on. It's a pleasure to be able to assist you in this endeavor.
Thanks for being here, Jay.
Yes, my pleasure. But first of all, I wanted to be able to tell a story. Because as in any judicial process, courtroom process, the person who tells the best story, as in stories, not lies, normally wins the case because he paints the picture for the jury. So my take on this was that we needed to tell the public the story and paint the picture for them in such a way that they could follow it step by step as if they were virtually living it. Okay? So I decided to focus on the process of the matter, especially when I found out that this case had been referred to the FBI by someone in the Financial Administrative Division, I imagine of ETI, Mr. Grabowski, and the FBI had essentially told him this is a civil case. This is not a prosecutorial case, a criminal matter. We feel it's best for you to pursue this as a civil matter because it's a debt collection case. Ms. Holland herself, even in her letter to Mr. Harper, Demetrius Harper, she says point blank, and I quote, "I suggest, I demand IRP pay its debts."
Okay? Exactly. That's one of the things we had talked about in the sense that, you know, Ms. Holland herself actually called it out as debt. So how can you take debt and criminalize it?
Right, exactly. So what I decided to focus on in the very beginning was to start, you know, what I like to call, I want to break the ankle of the person who's running with this ball.
Right.
Because if you break that ankle, then you have nowhere. That person can't go anywhere. So we're going to break the ankle of the story and see how exactly it got from one place to another. So I decided to focus on the process. And as you recall in my first article, I pointed out that abuse of process is a cause of action in tort arising from one party making a malicious and deliberate misuse or perversion of a regularly issued court process, civil or criminal, that is not justified by the underlying legal action, which in essence means the criminalization of the IRP 6 and the debt collection case was not justified by the underlying legal action. The process was originally should have been a civil matter. So how did it go from a civil matter to a criminal matter? And what was the motive behind it? Why they used that process instead of pursuing a civil process.
Exactly. Hey, Jay, hold that thought. We'll be right back. You're listening to A Just Cause Coast to Coast on conservativenationmedia.com. Cliff.
The left can't stand the Second Amendment and Americans' right to keep and bear arms. And now there's something else they're sure to hate. It's the Second Amendment Forum on conservativenationmedia.com with Maxwell Winchester Roberts. We welcome Max and his decades of firearms and Second Amendment rights experience to Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Central, or 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. The leftist administration in D.C. wants to disarm the American people, and Max just won't let that happen. The Second Amendment Forum, Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins.
Who wins, Cliff?
America.
America always wins. Hey, you're listening to A Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, with my co-host Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez joining us from A Just Cause as well. We're on the phone with Jay Arrington, staff writer for Maryland Daily Examiner. Jay is doing a series on the IRP6. And Jay, give me just one quick moment here. I need to throw in a disclaimer. You know, Cliff and I are not attorneys. A Just Cause Coast to Coast is not a program that provides legal advice. The opinions expressed by the callers into the program are not necessarily those of A Just Cause Coast to Coast or conservativenationmedia.com. So please contact your legal professionals for specific legal needs. Thank you all for joining the program. And if you'd like to call in, callers, if you have a question for Jay, have a question for us, you can call in at 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. We're on with Jay Arrington from the Maryland Daily Examiner. So, Jay, we were just talking about the due process with the IRP6 case. And how can you take debt and criminalize it? So, Jay, go ahead and continue on your thought there and what you were thinking as far as when you started writing this series for IRP6.
Well, not unlike most situations in our lives, we all bring something to the table based on our past experiences. And when you smell something, when something has a smell to it and then the smell is verified by what you're seeing, then you know what it is, okay? It's not hard to tell. It's not hard to figure out. But again, going back to the ulterior motive for this, when Ms. Holland says to Mr. Harper in her letter, and I quote, she says,
Well, Jay, we're going to have to stop right there. We need to pick up on another set. You know, somebody's got to pay the bills. We'll let you come back.
Okay.
What does it take to be the leader in production systems technology? To be the one company that solves production problems at any plant, for any product, and with any technology? It takes a 30-year record of success. It takes total mastery of complex technologies with a history of delivering success every time, without fail. Only one company can claim that high ground in manufacturing line optimization, data automation, and systems integration, and that's Philadelphia Control Systems. In factories worldwide, Philadelphia Control Systems programs, software, and engineering solutions deliver optimal performance and output flow with a record that can't be matched. Any plant, any product, any technology. Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-9811. PCSforAutomation.com. That's PCS, the number 4, automation.com.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I want to be a glass countertop in a new home.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's best birthday present.
When I grow up, I want to be a football stadium.
When I grow up, I want to be a warm place on a cold day.
When I grow up, I want to be a fancy
backpack.
When I grow
up, I want to be a bike that races around the
country. When I grow up, I want to be a bench on a forest trail.
When I grow up, I want to be a rocking chair on
when
a sunny
I grow up,
porch.
I want to be a skyscraper.
I want to be a...
I want to be a...
All the
I want
to
be
a...
I want to be
I want to be
I
want to
be
a...
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. A public service advertisement brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
Welcome to the program. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, joined by Cliff Stewart, my co-host, and Ethel Lopez. You're tuned to a Just Cause Coast to Coast. We provide education, awareness, information about judicial injustice right here on conservativenationmedia.com. On the phones with us is Jay Arrington, staff writer for Maryland Daily Examiner. Jay is doing a series on the IRP6. Callers, you can call in at 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. Okay, Jay, you were getting ready to jump into talking about Susan Holland and that web of that nasty web of all the players involved from Holland and Hart and the U.S. Attorney's Office and so forth. So, Jay, yes. go for it.
Yeah, of course. Like I was saying, the my purpose from the outset was to focus on the process, how we got to where we from one place to another, and the process along the way. And as I said, the motive, the underlying motive of this criminal process did not support the actual process itself. Okay, so there was an ulterior purpose here. The ulterior purpose here was stated in writing by Ms. Holland in her letter, and I'll read it. She said, quote, to Mr. Harper, "I will not only make you pay, I will make sure your name is known throughout the staffing industry nationwide. I will muddy your name and IRPs with the federal government. I have an excellent relationship with the federal government, especially the SBA." I would imagine that's the Small Business Administration.
Right.
And that portion of the letter is important for two reasons. And then she went on to say, "I demand you and IRP pay its debt." Those two statements are important. They're for two reasons. One, Ms. Holland clearly states that this is about debt. So
that's
we
correct.
Know that it's been established. This is a debt, a civil case about debt.
Right.
It also indicates that the regular process in a court of law should have been a civil process. Okay?
And you know what, Jay? Let me have Cliff, you know, because of the fact that when you talk about the normal process, you know,
right,
this thing went totally upside down. And, you know, we've talked to you about it, Jay, as far as the way a normal, you know, if this had been a legitimate criminal situation, what
right
should happen. So let's share with the listeners, you know, Cliff, you know, how should this process actually work?
Well, typically what will happen is you'll have someone in the public, they'll make a complaint to the FBI. So we take this, the IRP6 case, you know, as like the subject matter. So you say one of these staff and agencies would have reached out to the FBI and said, hey, I think something is going wrong with this company. I think they're doing something against the law, something crooked, yada, 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 whatever claim they want to make. So the FBI would then do their due diligence and say, okay, we'll investigate that for you. That's what we do. They would investigate this situation and then go and say, well, if they find some type of crime, if they find something they feel is going wrong, they will take that information to the U.S. Attorney's Office of their state. In this case, you know, the U.S. Attorney's Office up in Denver, Colorado, run by U.S. Attorney John Walsh. At that point, the U.S. Attorney's Office would say, okay, you're showing us that you did an investigation, you have some information here, and the FBI is like, yeah, we have this, we want to know if you think it's enough that we can take it to a grand jury and try to get an indictment on these individuals.
And you know, Jay, this case, they actually had two grand juries even in this case. And so
yes,
when you talk about the process, you know, I think you coined the phrase the other day when you and I were talking, and you said, if at first you don't indict, try again. You know,
right,
you had one grand jury. The grand jury heard all the witnesses, saw a lot of evidence, and that grand jury came back and said, this is not a criminal case. This is a debt collection case. Why are we even listening to it? Well,
right,
Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch convenes a second grand jury, and he brings in one witness, FBI agent Moen. And in this situation, the grand jury does not – they obviously don't get a chance to see everything. They don't get a chance to hear everything. And that's when the IRP6 get indicted.
Right, exactly.
And Jay, if you would, like I was saying with that process, you know, typically somebody from the public would go to the FBI when they have an issue. And I know I read your article. Would you give a little bit of what you wrote in that article about what happened when one of the staff companies did go to the FBI?
Well, when one of the staff companies did go to the FBI responded with a letter from to Mr. Grabowski. Mr. Grabowski was the vice president of a finance administration. I don't know exactly what staffing agency he was associated with, but he wrote a letter to special agent in charge Richard Powers, who responded in kind and told him basically, you know, I'll paraphrase, we regret to inform you that we are unable to assist you in this matter and therefore no investigation will be conducted by the FBI. However, we have made it a matter of record. We feel that this would best be handled civilly and have noted you have initiated legal action. So basically what he told him, he says, we can't help you. You're wasting your time with us. Pursue the legal action that you have already taken. That's
and you know,
the best.
Just, and basically, no, I'm sorry. Basically what that points to is that the system, had it been allowed to work the way it's designed to work, would have
right
worked properly, correct?
Would have worked properly. And see, and what makes this, see, what's the reason why this letter is such, you know, It shines so brightly, the ramifications of this letter are connected to the ramifications of the letter Ms. Holland wrote. Because after this letter was actually written after, this was in 2004. I think this may have been after, this was in 2005. This was after Ms. Holland wrote her letter to Greg Goldberg, I mean, to Demetrius, I do believe.
Yeah, I believe you're right.
Yeah, but in any event, this staffing agency tried to do what Greg Goldberg ultimately got Matt Kirsch to do, and the FBI told him no. But the thing about it is, If you investigate the letter that Goldberg hand delivered to Matthew Kirsch, and first of all, let's make it a matter of record for this program that Matthew Kirsch and Greg Goldberg were co-workers in the U.S. Attorney's Office. They were co-workers in the U.S. Attorney's Office. Mr. Goldberg apparently left and went to Holland and Hart. Another thing that we need to make a matter of record is that John Walsh, who was running the U.S. Attorney's Office, was also a former partner at Holland and Hart. Okay? Now, in the letter that Mr. Goldberg hand-delivered to Mr. Kirsch, which I still don't understand what the urgency was that he had to hand-deliver that letter, and I imagine if I were to imply, I'm not going to accuse anybody of this, but we do know that mail fraud consists of you mailing something that's not true. Once you put a stamp on a letter and you represent it as true, that's mail fraud.
Jay, you know that is a good way of looking at that.
Yeah, so maybe that's why he hand delivered that letter. But also, what you have to, sometimes, you know, you have to take your glasses off to see what it is you're looking at.
Right.
Because your glasses only help you see what you're looking at, but they don't help you see what you don't see.
Right.
You know, sometimes you got to take them off. Now, what we have to do, we have to look at, there's a portion in Goldberg's letter where he says to Kirsch, the attached document. What attached documents did he give to Kirsch to persuade him to pursue this case criminally? What did he say to Kirsch to make him pursue this case in a criminal matter? Especially when they know all they had to do, since the FBI had already made it a matter of record that they had told Mr. Grabowski that this was not a criminal case, the FBI already knew they had ruled on this. How did they persuade the FBI after that, the U.S. Attorney, who knew it was already told to Mr. Grabowski that we did not have a criminal case? What did he have in those attachments that showed a criminal procedure, that warranted a criminal procedure? And especially, you have to also take this into consideration. How is it they believe that they knew better than the Department of Homeland Security?
That's right.
The Department of Homeland Security have verified that the software was authentic, asked the IRP6 to put a federal face on it, asked them to tweak different scenarios for terror-related activities, terror-related situations. If this was this, you cannot paint an invisible picture.
That's right.
If it was there, it had to be there in order for the Department of Homeland Security to even pursue it.
That's correct. Hey, you're listening to A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we provide education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, along with Cliff Stewart, my co-host, and Ethel Lopez. We're on the phone right now with Jay Arrington, a staff writer for the Maryland Daily Examiner. We're taking a look at the IRP6 case. Hey, you know, we're using the IRP6 case as a case study of how things can go terribly wrong in the criminal justice system, and how, you know, in this situation, there is obvious judicial misconduct and just flat-out miscarriage of justice. You know, we want to just give a quick update even on the IRP6 case here, Jay. You know, we have Mark Garagos out of L.A. has joined the team with a just cause as far as suing the federal court reporter, Darlene Martinez, up in Denver. And, you know, we have this situation. We'll dive a little bit further into it a little bit later, but just wanted to give this quick update that, you know, we have a missing transcript. And then the judge, we found in the actual transcript from the proceedings, on the last day of trial, the defendants asked the judge, hey, you know, Judge Arguello, what about that motion that we filed for the sidebar where you violated our Fifth Amendment right? The judge and the court reporter basically confirmed that 200 pages of the transcript, the sidebar included, are missing. 200 pages are missing. Hey, when we get later into the program, we're going to dive into that. Jay, we have a press release out there that folks can go out to www.a-justcause.com and pull up that press release. Jay, in just 5 days, that press release went over 100,000 impressions.
One of the worst nightmares that can befall is identity theft. If it happens to you, it may take months or even longer to recover from it, if you recover at all. Don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps protect your personal information, use a combination of data surveillance techniques, and outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that can help LifeLock. Protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service. Go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions. Scope may vary. That's conservative media, conservativenationmedia.com, then click on the LifeLock banner. You'll be very glad.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed... could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Kate Pearson from the B-52s for RAD. Getting drunk is your own business, but when you drive drunk, you make it everybody's business. Don't drink and drive. Be responsible, plan ahead, and choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Wait, is that a... goat?
Goats are a great gift, but maybe not for her. Go to goatsfortheoldgoat.com to give a goat and end hunger in South Sudan. So, do you like it? Goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Welcome to the program right here on conservativenationmedia.com. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, along with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. Callers, you can call us in at 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. Tonight, we're going to bring you information about the IRP 6 case, and Jay Arrington is joining us. He's a staff writer from the Maryland Daily Examiner, talking about abuse of process. We're taking a deep dive into how this case got started, and as I was saying before the break, you know, Cliff, this case is going to serve as a case study, if you will. I mean, we'll be talking about several other cases. As a matter of fact, before the show, I think Ethel, both of us got a call from a guy in North Carolina. You know, and Steve was sharing his story, and it's a compelling story. You know, that we will be bringing Steve on the air here probably in the next couple of shows, and
awesome.
You know, we've got the producers working on that. We're also going to, for the person of the week this week, we're going to take a look at the Herman Wallace story of Angola 3. And joining us to talk about that will be Jackie Smell. And then also, we're going to talk about some parallels between the IRP 6 case and Senator Ted Stevens, which was a case that happened a few years ago. So, Jay, are you still there? Jay, are you with us?
Yes, thank you. I'm here.
Hi, Jay. So, Jay,
yeah.
we were just talking about, you know, the criminalization of the IRP 6 debt, and then also, you know, the players that got involved. And you made an excellent point as far as hand-carrying a package over to the U.S. Attorney's Office and how, you know, Attorney Goldberg did that. And, you know, some of the things that jump out to you, Cliff, about that is that the things that Goldberg put in his letter, and folks, you can go out to www.a-justcause and read information about the IRP6 case. You can also go to www.freetheirp6.org. Again, www.freetheirp6.org. We have a lot of documents out there. And you can actually see this letter firsthand that Goldberg took. And, you know, one thing that jumps out, Cliff, is the fact that Goldberg points out that you need to go after this person, and you need to go after them for mail and wire fraud, conspiracy, and racketeering. Guess what they got charged with?
Exactly. Mail fraud and wire fraud conspiracy. And the thing that you have to look at with Goldberg, although he was previously an assistant U.S. attorney, it is against the law for a private attorney to inject or interfere in a federal case. And when you look at this situation and you look at what happened here, Goldberg and the FBI agent, Special Agent Charles John Smith, there was communication going back and forth with these two individuals about this case. So you have an FBI agent, he's sending faxes to Greg Goldberg at Holland and Hart. So Jay, you talk about, you know, that mail fraud and wire fraud. That might be a great thing to pick up there to say, well, when Smith was sending this stuff back across on faxes, you know, was he and Goldberg, committing wire fraud right there? But
they're going to protect themselves.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
They're going to protect themselves. Come on.
Well, listen, if nothing else, it implies a conspiracy.
Absolutely.
Let me give you an analogy just to put it keep it simple. Not that we wouldn't understand, but just to give you an analogy. When I was a car salesman for 30 years in the automobile industry, my family, if they had somebody they wanted to buy that wanted to buy a car, they would always bring them to me. If you have a person that works in a bakery and you know somebody who wants to buy a cake, you're going to take that person to the baker that you know. And the reason you do that is because that person that you have on the inside is generally going to do what you want them to do. Okay?
Exactly.
Same thing. So that's why he went to Kirsch, because he knew Kirsch was going to do what he wanted him to do.
Because they
had worked together. He's an insider. He's my man at the dealership. You know what I'm saying? He's my man at the restaurant. He can get us a good table. You know, it happens in every line of work, every association. Lawyers talk with lawyers. Maintenance men talk with maintenance men. Advocacy people talk with advocacy people. Newspaper people talk with newspaper people. He's my source. He's this, he's that. It's no different in the justice system. It's no different. And that's exactly what happened here. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure it out. The thing about it is here, they depended on the fact or relied upon what they believed was the truth, that this would not be pursued once the gentlemen were in prison.
Right.
You're absolutely correct.
They relied on the fact that nobody would have the wherewithal or the courage to go against them, okay, to question them. That's why, why do you think it cost you $10,000 to get those transcripts? Because that's how they discourage you, because they don't think that you're going to have the money to do that.
Well, and you know what, Jay? On that point, even in the transcript of the last day of the proceeding, because the guys were representing themselves pro se, the judge actually brought out a point, and when she asked the question, well, how many pages are we talking about? And then court reporter Darlene Martinez, she said, we're talking over 200 pages. And they calculated and said, well, that's going to be about $600. Judge Arguello then goes on to say, well, I see no reason to make that available. It's not going to be, you know, I'm paraphrasing here. It's not going to be used for anything. It can't be used for anything. And I'm not going to expedite that request. And I'm not going to make those pages available to the defendants. You know, how can you have a judge that does something like that?
And when does it become the judge's jurisdiction on whether the defendants get their transcript. That's all they have to go off of on appeal. She can't
right.
make that call to get their transcript or not.
But
it's
see,
not.
But we know why she did that, because she
Absolutely.
Was a partner at Holland and Hart herself.
A part of the conspiracy.
She was a partner at that law firm once before. That's why she did that. Because, like I said, it's too simple in its simplicity. It's too many coincidences going on here. John Walsh, Matthew Kirsch, Greg Goldberg, Judge Arguello, all in the same law firm, and all of them happen to be a part of this particular case. And then
right,
you know
what, Jay, even when it was brought to the judge's attention to say, you were a partner at Holland and Hart. Why don't you recuse yourself? Even with that on the table, and like you say, because they were pro se, she just basically threw that out, saying, "Well, I'm not going to recuse myself." You know, because there was a she used the issue that I only knew Greg Goldberg at Holland and Hart in passing. Yeah, I was a partner there, but I only knew him in passing. Goldberg makes a statement in the Denver Post newspaper when Judge Arguello came up for judgeship, because they both came up at the same time, and he came in. I know Christine Arguello very well, and I think she'd be a good judge. And when you look at that, and you have this blatant, yes, I know her, I think she would be great, and she still does not recuse herself. It's totally, totally ridiculous.
Yeah, but see, it's the appearance of impropriety. It's not, see, that's the only thing, that is what's germane to the issue. It does, see, it's not the letter of the law in this case, it's the spirit of the law when it comes to conflict of interest. It's the appearance of impropriety, you know.
Right.
If
right.
they
that,
did
and that, that appearance says that she should have stepped away, and that's the bottom line.
ConservativeNationMedia.com starts off the week every Monday in a big way. It's Inside Tennessee with Dave Vance. But even if you're not from the Volunteer State, the issues that affect Tennessee are spreading all over America. Dave Vance brings his veterans' insight and the most informative guests to Inside Tennessee every Monday, so make sure to check him out. Brought to you by Tennessee Action Council, Inside Tennessee, Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. We're back, and this is a Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman with my co-host Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. On the phone, we have Jay Arrington with the Maryland Daily Examiner. We got some excellent dialogue going on here, talking about the IRP 6 case. And, you know, let's talk a little bit more about that transcript situation. So, you know, we were talking about how the judge just took it upon herself to make a decision for the IRP 6. Now, Jay, we have a couple of minutes to talk about this. We've got to go to a hard break. But, you know,
okay.
what's your spin on that?
Well, my spin on it is quite simple, really. She's redacting. She's doing redaction. She's doing what the government does when it doesn't want you to know what it's up to. She redacted that transcript literally, you know. Because listen, the very reason that she didn't recuse herself is the very reason she doesn't want you to have that transcript. If she had recused herself, The plan would have fallen apart.
Exactly.
The plan would have fallen apart. The plan could not have been brought to fruition without her, you know, because an impartial judge sitting in that chair would have looked at the case and said, "Are you crazy? You know, are you kidding me?"
Folks are actually taking notice of this because, like I said earlier, we actually have a press release out talking about these 200 pages omitted and not being allowed to the defendants, which is critical to their appeal. And so, you know, and the reason I say that people are taking note is because, you know, we put this press release out on Thursday. As of this morning, it was 106,000 impressions. We've never had a press release to perform that way. And so I'm going to have one of our folks check out where that number is right now. We're going to give an update on, you know, where those impressions are. Right now, you're tuned to a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we provide education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. On the phones, we have Jay Arrington. He's a staff writer with the Maryland Daily Examiner. We're talking about the IRP 6 case. We will be back in just a few minutes. We're going to take a break.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today. With an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria. Where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria. And thank you for your service.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. The odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
Welcome back to the program. To Just Pause Radio, DJ Steve. Education, awareness, education, judicial justice. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, with Cliff Stewart, my co-host. We have Ethel Lopez. Also on the phone, we have Jay Arrington. He's spending the evening with us. Jay is a staff writer with the Maryland Daily Examiner. Callers, if you'd like to call in, call at 718-305-7176. 718-305-7176. Jay, thanks for being with us. Hey, Jay, we got someone on the phone. It's a friend of ours and a friend of yours. Toni, are you there?
I am here. Hey.
Toni, hey, what's up, sis?
How you doing?
All right, girlfriend.
Oh, my goodness. You know, I've been listening in. Great show. But first, before I move on, let me say to you, Sam and Jay, and Cliff, what a job. What a job. And, you know, I'm very, very proud of what you're doing. I stand by you in every turn that you intend to make with making sure that the IRP 6 are freed. And just by doing a show and providing awareness as to this case and to the entire injustice that so many people face in our justice system. I just commend you. My hat is off to you.
Thank you, Toni. And, you know, we really appreciate, you know, the things that you've done on behalf of the IRP 6 and, you know, as far as working with us, working with Jay, and Jay has done every bit of everything that you said he would do, and you're doing every bit of everything that you said you would do. And, you know, Toni, I also have to just give a shout-out to Duke Brooks. You know, he's the general manager and president of ConservativeNationMedia.com. And Duke and Michael B., you know, they're making this all possible. They had us on the air on their show maybe about a month ago, and they were so moved by the IRP story as well and just the recognition that this type of thing is rampant in this nation. As you know, as Tony, you know, we've talked about it, and it's rampant in this nation. It's a systemic problem. Mm-hmm. It has no color. It has no party affiliation. Mm-hmm. When you have rogue folks in the federal government who carry a badge, and we, you know, we like to use the term, we're not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but there are some elements within those ranks that we need to, you know, expose. Callers, you can call us at 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. We're on the phone with Jay Arrington from the Maryland Daily Examiner. We also have Tony Breedlove. So, Jay, and Tony, jump in there anywhere you want to as we talk about this. We're talking about the, you know, the missing transcript and, you know, the challenges with that and how it's impacting the appeal. And Tony, as you know, we brought on Mark Garagos of Garagos out of L.A., and Mark has filed a motion with the courts here in Denver to get the missing transcripts, and we are suing Darlene Martinez, who was the court reporter in this situation. You know, we're going to get those transcripts because our brothers have to come home.
You know, and I just I become almost speechless, and I think as Jay would know, that is very rare for me. And when I had you on the show, and in speaking to Olivia prior to the show, getting all the information and making sure that we had all our ducks in a row, I think that particular part of this case, to me, is astounding. I don't understand how anything can become missing or become unfound. We're talking about a legal case and legal proceedings. It is unheard of. The acts that have been taken to make sure that these six men are kept in lockup, as it has, it's unconscionable. It is absolutely ludicrous. I have never heard of a case that had so many twists and turns. And anything that I can do, and if Ethel is listening, I have not forgotten about you, Ethel. I
hear you. I was just about to say thank you so much. We appreciate everything that you guys do and you guys have done for us, you know, and helping us to bring stuff like this to the light, not just for the IRP6, but for others that have been wrongly convicted as well. We really, really do appreciate it. And another thing I wanted to say to that was, Jay was talking about, you know, a few minutes ago, he was making reference to, you know, why they're doing this and the things that, you know, the reason why and all this stuff. But, you know, when they get people in behind bars and they really don't think that, you know, there are families out there, somebody's family is going to fight. And they want to do everything that they can possibly do to put a bridge in the way or to stop that. So they want to charge you for everything. They, you know, the missing transcripts. Okay, we're going to charge you $10,000, which is what Jay was talking about. You know, we're going to charge you for that just the transcript. Now we have a part of it that's missing. You're going to have to come back and pay for that. But then if you want it, you have to get a lawyer. So you're going to have to pay for this lawyer to come in and take care of that. So every way, they're going to try and strip you so that you are going to put an end to what it is that you're doing and leave well enough alone as they see.
Exactly. And
they want you to give up. They want you to give up. And
that's it, the bottom line.
Let me put it into some clarity on why they won't give you those transcripts. If you remember, I'm sure all of you you've seen Sylvester and Tweety.
Right,
the
right.
The cat and the bird, and mm-hmm. Sylvester eats Tweety, and the woman comes in there and says, "Did you eat the bird?" And he says, "No," but then he belches, and the feather comes out.
Right, right. Now,
that's the same thing with these transcripts, because the transcripts are going to show you ate the bird.
That's it.
You ate the bird. You know, they're hiding the bird from you because they know that's the feather. The transcript is the feather in their mouth. In their mouth, and they know that's the smoking gun. Because without that, you can't. We'll still win with that. We'll win even without that. But that would make it much easier for us to win because we are going to prevail. You know,
sometimes,
we are going to prevail.
Sometimes you have to hit them in the gut to make that feather come up, though, you know?
That's
what you got to do. That's what we're going to do.
You got to give them the Heimlich maneuver. You know what I'm saying? You got to come from behind and get them, you know, because if they see you coming, they're going to dodge. So you got to come from behind like the Heimlich, you know, and make him force stuff out of them. And that's what truth does. That's what truth, and that's what soldiers of God do, because God will give you soldiers to fight for you when you are in the right. And they didn't
expect that.
They did not expect that, you know. But 200 pages of missing transcript, that's a novel.
Exactly. And, you know, Sam and I had a call with our attorney friend that's out of New York Sunday. And he told us, you know, when we first told him about the missing transcript, we're saying, you know, why is it that we're finding it so difficult for someone to take responsibility and get, you know, say that they have jurisdiction over this missing transcript? He said, what you guys have to understand is that this does not happen in federal court cases. He said in a federal court case, if you don't allow the defendants to have a transcript that they can do their appeal off of, the case is basically thrown out. So he said it's always that the transcript is available. And, you know, that even speaks to more about the egregious acts that this judge is doing. And when we told him, yeah, it's over 200 pages, there was nothing he could say but, whoa. You know, that was his response. He was 200 pages missing. He just said, whoa.
Tony, had you heard about that, Tony?
I did not.
Yeah,
that's insane. I mean, you can understand. I can't even understand. But I think you could. I think it would be more palatable if someone said we're missing a couple of lines in the transcript. Then we know, okay, well, that's normal human error. Even if they said we're missing a page.
Exactly. And you know, Tony, there's a difference between error and deliberate act.
Yeah, but see, the thing about it is, ask yourself this question. How did 200 pages of transcript become separated from the record?
That's where I was
going,
Jim.
How did it become separated? How did those 200 pages manage to be, just those 200 pages of the judge's sidebar, become separated from all of the other record in the court proceeding?
That's right.
That's deliberate.
Yeah. Hey, Tony,
that's
go ahead. Make your point,
Listen,
Tony.
The wind did just not blow in there and just happen to blow those 200 pages away. You know, the moth didn't come in there and just happen to eat those 200 pages.
Hey, Tony, go ahead and make your point. I heard you trying to jump in there.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Oh, no, I was letting Jay go ahead and finish that out, but, you know, he hit the nail on the head. That's 200 pages. That's 200 pages of intricate information and detail and everything that is needed for making sure that these guys get out of prison.
Right.
Those 200 pages were dead. Can you say that anything else was missing? Or is everything in line as it should have been? So why is it those 200 pages? What is the information in those 200 pages that happen to go missing?
And
you know, 199 is still there and 201 is still there.
And Tony, the attorney friend
go
that...
You from 199 to 400. Where are the other 200? And where
exactly.
the 200 in between? You know,
exactly.
it's complicit evidence. That's why it's evidence of complicity.
And you know, Tony, the attorney friend that Cliff was saying that we spoke with earlier during the weekend, he actually stated that 200 pages of a transcript. Just to expound upon your point, Tony, 200 pages of a transcript encompasses more than what just happened on that sidebar. There was a lot that happened. Hey, you're listening to A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Callers, you can call in at 718-305-7176. On the phones tonight, we have the staff writer for Maryland Daily Examiner doing a series on the IRP 6, Jay Arrington. We also have a surprise call from Tony Love. She's the host of Hot Topics Talk with Tony Breedlove. Tony, we want to thank you for joining us as well. Hey, I told everyone I'd get that number to you on that how that press release was performing. It's at 110,900. So basically 111,000. I mean, you know, let's just chalk it up. Hey, we'll be back right after this break. This is the Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, Cliff Stewart of Flowcast. Be back right back in a moment.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Hey, there he is. How's it going?
I'm having a stroke.
Are you going to shake my hand or what?
I'm having a stroke.
Wow, you're not even moving your arm.
I'm having a stroke.
Are you okay?
I'm having a stroke.
Your face looks weird, too.
I'm having a stroke.
Are you having a seizure or something?
I'm having a stroke.
When someone is having a stroke, they may not be able to say it with words, but their body language will tell you loud and clear.
I'm having a stroke.
You just need to know the sudden signs. Look for FAST, F-A-S-T. F, face drooping. A, arm weakness. Or S, speech difficulty. Then T, time. Time to call 911 immediately. Because the sooner they get to the hospital, the sooner they'll get treatment. And that can make a remarkable difference in their recovery. Know the sudden signs. Face, arm, speech, time. Spot a stroke fast. Visit strokeassociation.org. Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
It is with great pleasure that I welcome you to today's graduation ceremony. Students, when you hear the reason or reasons for your absences throughout the years, please exit the auditorium without your high school diploma. Once you've exited, remove your cap and gown and proceed into the unknown. Too tired. Family trip. Part-time job. Helping around the house. Sick day. Starting the holidays early. Just because.
Starting in the sixth grade, students who miss 18 days or more of school in a year for any reason will fall behind and risk not graduating high school. How many days of school has your child missed this year? Absences add up. Keep track at boostattendance.org today. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the program of Just Cause Coaching. I'm Sam Thurman, bringing you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Cliff, Ethel, how you doing this evening?
Doing good. The second hour of it like it is and letting the public know what's going on with our judiciary.
Got that Petro in the system, right?
Oh, yeah.
Jay, did you get a chance to fill up on that, replenish your tea?
No, one's enough for me.
On the phones we have...
My heart won't take too much caffeine.
on the phones we have Jay Arrington, staff writer with the Maryland Daily Examiner. Jay is doing a series on the IRP 6, and then also joining us the last few minutes with Tony Breedlove, host of Hot Topics with Tony Breedlove. You're tuned to a Just Cause Coast to Coast on ConservativeNationMedia.com. Listeners, you can call in at 718-305-7176. 718-305-7176. Tony, how long are you going to be with us?
You know, actually, I wanted to hang on until after you came from break to just kind of like duck out quietly. But I did want to stay around just long enough to tell you how very, very proud of what I am of what you're doing, how very important it is of what you all are doing. There are so many people that are in this country as well as beyond that are faced with all of these legal injustices. And what you're doing is something that I think that very well will be able to change how the justice system works. And again, I applaud you for everything all of you are doing. And again, I will continue to do whatever I can on my end through our show And Ethel, again, I have not forgotten about you. I've been extremely busy. That is part of the reason why I need to duck out tonight. As early as I'm doing, I have to continue writing a show for tomorrow night, and I'm so far behind.
But I just
wanted to be able to come in and congratulate you on what you're doing, congratulate you on the show, and to continue to let you know that we here at Hot Topics Talk Radio will continue to be here as a leaning post, as a huge supporter. And anything you need, just holler out.
All right, Tony, thank you for joining
thank
us. Have
so
a good
much.
Night, Tony. Tony
Breed.
Thank Lawrence.
You. So, good night, Jay.
All right, love you too, sis.
Love you, babe.
All right.
Okay, thanks, Tony. All right, so let's get back to our conversation here as far as talking about the IRP6. And, you know, also when we talk about the due process, you know, let's talk about, you know, we talked a little bit about that nasty web of folks that were involved as far as, you know, hand-carrying stuff over to the U.S. Attorney's Office. And you know, Jay brought up the point that maybe he was trying to avoid a mail fraud charge there himself. You know, but then, you know, when you take it to the next step, Cliff, and you have an FBI agent who is just in an investigation, and he launches an investigation by getting a judge to sign off on a warrant, stating the company was fraudulent and that IRP Solutions was not even really a real company, not even really developing software.
Exactly. I mean, you have this FBI agent who is John Smith out of the Colorado Springs office, and he writes this his search warrant affidavit. And you know, the search warrant affidavit is what an agent writes up, takes to a federal judge, and says, "Look, I have this call, and I'm seeing that this place needs to be brought down. These people are committing crime." He writes up this fraudulent affidavit saying that IRP Solutions is a purported software company. And the thing that is discoverable about that is that, first off, he had interviewed Department of Homeland Security, representatives. He had interviewed people at New York Police Department, detectives there, and people who had seen the Silk software from IRP Solutions. So he's knowing this is not a front company. This is real software. It exists. It's been demoed, it's been modified and customized for Department of Homeland Security. He knows all this, but on top of that, there are also three retired federal agents that worked at IRP Solutions. One of these agents was Gary Hilberry, who was a retired Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent. He had been in the, working as a federal agent for over 20 years. He came on the IRP as a subject matter expert to help with finalizing the software, to put the federal face on it, and things of that nature. He wrote an affidavit to John Smith saying, "Look, I'm working at IRP Solutions. I'm working there. I'm not getting paid until the software is sold. That's how much I believe in it." He laid out that the software was viable for federal, state, and local government, and that the company was doing real business. And with all of these things on the table, John Smith still goes after the affidavit to the judge saying this is a purported software company. They don't really have anything. They're just saying they do. And in other words, this is a front organization, basically writing up a lie, getting a federal judge to sign off of it to raid a small business with software that was put in place to assure that another 9/11 event would not happen.
So basically, like Lan, as far as I'm trying to avoid, or apparently trying to avoid a mail fraud by hand carrying something, in this situation, you have an agent that just blatantly, outright lies to a judge and says that this company is purportedly developing software, all in an effort to get a warrant signed, also he can execute a raid on the company.
Exactly. It's all a part of web of deception, of friendships, of connections, of, hey, you know, we know this person and that person. It's all about that connection because, I mean, Agent Smith, when he came on the case, he had been working at the FBI about a year and a half. The agent in Denver who said this was a civil case, he had been there a long time. He looked at it like, this is a civil matter. This is not an issue that the FBI needs to deal with. This is something that needs to be taken up at the civil court. But in the web of friendship that was being called in, John Smith was called upon to ensure that IRP walked before the federal government to be brought down.
I have a question for you guys in reference to that, because I'm hearing about Agent John Smith, who has gone to the judge to get this warrant signed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the question to that is, what about John Smith's supervisor in this situation? Because from what I understand, his supervisor didn't even know about the raid. Am I correct?
Well, it goes higher than that, Ethel. It's actually the SAC, and that's the special agent in charge for the region, didn't even know. And this is some information that we had found out after the fact, that that the SAC for the FBI in Colorado didn't know that this raid was going down.
Right.
And so, you know, even that smells.
Wow.
I mean, it really, really reeks is what it does.
I mean, this stuff, I mean, it says conspiracy all over the place. I mean, how do you get around it? How can anybody look at this case and not see all these people connected in this thing and all these people in the midst of this who knew each other and doing favors for each other? This is the conspiracy.
When the issue is when you have judges and prosecutors that aren't held accountable, they think they can get away with this stuff. And like Jay had mentioned, you know, you have this web of friends, you're calling in favors, you got all this stuff going on, and they're saying, hey, I didn't swallow the bird. Like you said, Ethel, you got to punch them in the stomach, get them to choke up that feather, and let everybody know what's really going on.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Jay, one of the things that we found out, too, even with, you know, and I know you're one of your next series is going to be about the indictment. So, you know, we're going to, when we get deeper into the story tonight, we're going to talk about the Ted Stevens case as well. And so, callers, 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. You're listening to A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, information about judicial injustice.
Our friendly local pilot in command and GOP spokesman Duke Brooks calls himself a paleocon and rightly so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy, Bill Buckley, and Whitaker Chambers. What would you bet? There's no truth to the rumor that he has a dartboard with Alger Hiss's picture on it, but you can get your weekly dose of old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and hangar flying on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks. Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins.
All right. Thanks, Cliff. Yeah, Duke, I like, we have some lively conversations with Duke. Right here on conservativenationmedia.com, A Just Cause, bringing you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. On we have with us Jay Arrington, staff writer for the Maryland Daily Examiner. And, Jay, I know the next segment that you're going to be working on is talking about the indictment, and we're talking about the IRP6 case. And, listeners, you can go out to freetheirp6.org. Again, freetheirp6.org to get all types of information on that. And so, Jay, we got a couple of minutes before we have a hard break. But kind of give us a highlight of the what you're going to work on your next segment, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about that indictment series.
Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about how what was the process in Assistant U.S. Attorney Kirsch convening a second grand jury after he didn't get an indictment the first time. And what was the difference between that grand jury presentation and the first one? And obviously, I do believe it was probably the FBI agent that he had testify. And what was the? I mean, and what was the difference? What was said in that grand jury that persuaded that grand jury versus the first one? You know,
I believe it boils down to facts.
But also, I want to go back to something that we were talking about just a few minutes ago, because this connects to this grand jury thing. The letter that Mr. Grabowski received from the FBI about his case being a civil matter,
right,
was dated August 8th, 2005. That was some 17 months after Goldberg had delivered his letter to Kirsch.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's like...
Goldberg's letter was delivered to Kirsch in March of 2004. In August of 2005, Grabowski got a letter from the FBI 17 months later that was not a criminal matter. It was civil matter. And you
That's
know
right.
who signed? Do you know who signed Grabowski's letter?
Who was that?
The supervisory special agent in charge.
Wow. Hey, Jay, hold that thought. You're listening to A Just Cause Coast to Coast. Education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We'll be right back, folks.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict. The war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to stand for America now.
It is with great pleasure that I welcome you to today's graduation ceremony. Students, when you hear the reason or reasons for your absences throughout the years, please exit the auditorium without your high school diploma. Once you've exited, remove your cap and gown and proceed into the unknown. Too tired. Family trip. Part-time job. Helping around the house. Sick day. Starting the holidays early. Just because.
Starting in the sixth grade, students who miss 18 days or more of school in a year for any reason will fall behind and risk not graduating high school. How many days of school has your child missed this year? Absences add up. Keep track at boostattendance.org today. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Welcome back to A Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, Cliff Stewart. Our special guest, Jay Arrington, with the Maryland Daily Examiner. We're talking about our case study of the IRP 6 case. And there are a lot of other cases out here, folks, that we can talk about. And, you know, Jay, we were just getting ready to get into a little bit of discussion about how the indictment in this situation with the IRP 6 case kicked off, and then we're going to kind of share a little bit about the Senator Ted Stevens case that happened several years ago. But Jay, what are your thoughts as far as the indictment and what you've seen in the IRP 6 case?
Well, like I said, the indictment was handed down in June of 2009. The original indictment. That's correct, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, 2009.
Which is the summer of 2009.
It purports that the company, a number here in Research or Staffing Companies, were in the business of providing temporary labor to IRP 6 staffing companies.
Well, and you know, one thing, Jay, is the fact that, you know, there were two grand juries. And in that first grand jury, and I'll share a little something with you. I don't know if I've shared this with you before or not. But in that first grand jury, you know, there were several folks who were called. You had people who had actually worked at IRP Solutions. You had, there were actual agents who were testified before that grand jury as well. That right, first grand jury, they looked at the evidence, and they saw it for what it was. I mean, this is a debt collection case. As a matter of fact, one of the grand jurors made the comment that, so you're telling me that if I don't pay my bills, you're going to come after me and charge me criminally for not paying my bills. That is a civil matter. The IRP 6 case is a civil matter that got criminalized. And there was absolutely nothing that had occurred in this in the way IRP was doing business that was criminal.
And now, Sam, not to interrupt you, but that point that you make about that that grand juror asking that question, saying, so you're telling me that if I go in debt and can't pay my bills, you're going to come after me criminally. That speaks to what this case is really about when it comes down to what the public has to understand. Basically, that statement tells you that now this case, since it was brought before before the federal courts, since it was convicted in the federal courts, and now they have it on record in the federal courts, this case can be used as case matter against you, against any person in the public, just like that grand juror says. You're telling me you can come after me and you can put me in prison for being in debt? That's what this case does. This case opens up that Pandora's box that says any person who goes into debt, you lose your job, something happens. Now you're not able to pay your credit card bills, you're not able to pay your mortgage, you've got some car payments backing up, and the federal government can come to you and say you never intended to pay them anyway. We're putting you in prison for 7 to 11 years just because we want to.
You're listening to A Just Cause, coast-to-coast on conservativenationmedia.com. Callers, you can call in at 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. Jay Arrington, staff writer of the Maryland Daily Examiner, is with us tonight. Jay, your point.
Yeah, I was going to say, from reading the indictment, they were telling the other day, they were saying that IRP executives were preventing the staffing companies from being paid by fraudulently representing slow payments from the government for their software application. However, that doesn't make sense on its face, because your premise for your argument is that the software did not exist. You have to show also that the government, if the software did not exist, how was the government paying IRP? What were they paying them for? Do you have record of the government ever making payments to IRP? No, you don't, because they never did, because the software was never finished because you interrupted the process.
Exactly.
Okay?
And you know, Jay, on that point, and I guess I have to clarify, on the federal level, yeah, that's where it was. On the state and local level, IRP had actually launched a marketing campaign whereby they were bundling the software and Dell computers, because they found out that a lot of the smaller agencies didn't even have the technology or the hardware to support driving the software. So IRP reached out to Dell Computer and got a smoking deal, and when a small agency did want to purchase the software, IRP executed a PO to Dell and had a computer drop shipped from Dell to that small agency. But on your point as far as the federal government, you're absolutely right. Yeah, that will that was turning slowly as far as the contracts type situation, but there was still negate the fact that there was still a lot of things going on. And one thing we talked about last week, Jay, was the fact that if you look at the sequence of events of things that were going on in the federal government, you had the failed initiative of the virtual case file, which $400 million had been wasted, and then you also have $820-something million that has been wasted with the Sentinel project. During this time frame that IRP was being courted by the federal government, it's in that 2004-2005 time frame. That's when the wheels were the wagon at the federal government as far as law enforcement is concerned with case management systems. So there is no coincidence that IRP was being contacted for a solution that really worked.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it's just, and of course, and again, you know, you, that, those are all great points. And again, you have to ask yourself, how is it you purport that these gentlemen were making false representations about slow government payment cycles? They were not even being paid by the government. The government never made a payment to IRP, did they?
No. I mean, IRP was still responding to the request from the federal government as far as modifying the software.
So there was no contract between IRP and the government, so how could they be making fraudulent representations about payments that weren't even, that did not exist?
And, you know, Jay, one thing, a couple of things that did actually happen, though, is that IRP was contacted by the Department of Homeland Security, and they specifically zeroed in on the confidential informant module, IRP, the case investigative lifecycle, the SILC software, the SILC software solution included. That was one module out of an 18-module software suite. Now, when the Department of Homeland Security asked for a quote for that module, that was a $100 million quote that was provided to the Department of Homeland Security by IRP Solutions. Also, the Department of Homeland Security had already identified and was talking to IRP Solutions about a $12 million pilot project. All of that is a matter of record, even for the Department of Homeland Security folks who testified at the trial. So even that substantiates the fact that there was no fraudulent activities going on, and yes, there were discussions going on with the Department of Homeland Security. Otherwise, you know, I guess to your point, Jay, how can someone from the Department of Homeland Security even show up for a trial to testify to say that, you know, are they going to sit up there and say that, no, they never heard of IRP Solutions and that they weren't engaged with them and that they weren't talking about a $12 million pilot project? You know, it all goes back to what you're saying as far as, you know, something was going on. There was no basis to say that anything fraudulent was going on.
No, and then, of course, you have to add in the fact, folks, the Cala Forensics testimony of Mr. Vilfer, is that his name?
Excellent point.
Mr. Vilfer, who the prosecution hired to validate the software, and his affidavit says the software was viable for the intended consumer, which in this case was the Department of Homeland Security and the New York City Police Department and the Philadelphia Police Department. Whomever was interested in this software, it was viable for the intended consumer, for the intended purchaser of the product, which, of course, the prosecution did not allow to be entered into evidence because it would have blown a hole right through his case.
And, you know, Jay, if you look at the credentials of Mr. Vilfer, he is a certified fraud examiner. He is a retired FBI, I'll say that again, a retired FBI forensics analyst. He's also an attorney. Now, when Vilfer brings the evidence that IRP, the SILC software, is legitimate and viable and that it does everything that IRP said it would do, they try and discredit Mr. Vilfer and say that, you know, well, what he's talking about, he's probably not, you know, in a position to be able to speak to this subject. Well, excuse, you picked him. You said that, you know, you said we're going to use him because we use him all the time. And now because he comes back and says that this software is real, guys, you know, I don't know why you're going after these folks because this thing is real and it does what they say it's going to do. And it's like, oh, Don, get out of here. You know, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
exactly
right.
What our attorney friend on the East Coast told us. He said the fact that they did not let that in just shows so many issues with what's going on with this case. First, they picked him. Then when he didn't come back with what they wanted to hear, they're like, well, you're useless. You don't know what you're talking about. We don't care about your credentials. And you look at it, and it all leads back to the fact that this was a conspiracy, a witch hunt against the IRP-6.
And, you know, Jay, you know, when we talk about the Ted Stevens case, I mean, some of these things mirror. I mean, you talk about evidence that's not being entered. You talk about witnesses that are not allowed to tell information as to the credibility of what was going on or to validate what Senator Stevens was saying. Now, you know, in this case, at least, you know, later on they did get a special investigation going. And, you know, that's one of the points I was talking about earlier today, is that it should not take for a person to be a senator. It should not take someone to be a high-profile entertainment figure. It should not take someone to be a friend of the president in order to get a special investigation going for something like this. You know, so hey, hang in there. We got to take a break and come back. We're going to do this moment, and then we have a special guest that's going to be joining us as well. That's going to be Jack Schmel.
Let's assume that if you're listening to ConservativeNationMedia.com, you're a conservative. You love America just like we do, and you don't want to get caught short in case the leftist government drops the ball and leaves the country, and your family unable to get the basics of life in an emergency. Since that's the case, you're going to want a supply depot to get everything from patriotic gear to survive, to outfit and protect you and your family. And your pipeline to those essentials is right here at ConservativeNationMedia.com. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That will take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative and emergency survival needs. Wave your flag and be ready for whatever the future holds starting right now. Just go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join a conservative revolution where America always wins.
Been looking for an online gathering place? You know, a familiar screen, does everything you're used to, except give you grief for being a conservative? You gotta try the Tea Party community. At TPC, you'll know how everything works from the very first minute, and you'll probably find a lot of friends who are already there. Organize, communicate, share ideas, upcoming events, pictures, and videos. The Tea Party community connects and empowers like-minded, politically conservative people like you. Sign up today at teapartycommunity.com.
Okay, so just type the job website address here. That's it. Then you enter what job you're looking for there.
Electrician.
This is Peter. Recently, he got help going on the internet for the first time to look for a new job.
Okay, then you just hit search and...
In the past, Peter's gotten work through people he knew, but he heard there were more jobs online.
There we go.
These are all for me?
Uh-huh.
Really?
He had no idea just how many.
I can't believe it. This one looks good.
Peter is thinking the internet might be for him after all.
And this is just one website.
Wow. Why didn't I...
Okay.
Whoa.
The moment my son saw a redwood tree.
It's huge!
Is the moment I knew that for him.
You can't even see the top of that thing!
Even the sky has no limit.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go. Your moment is out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Story of Herman Wallace of the Angola 3. The Angola 3 newsletter published on October 13, 2013 states, "Yesterday, Herman Wallace was laid to rest after a memorial service befitting his liberation roots. New Orleans supporters, friends, and family came together to create a magnificent send-off for Herman, just the way he wanted it. As a proud black man who struggled for justice for himself, his comrades, people, and all people, Herman wanted the remembrance to be in a community space and to provide a forum for many of his supporters to speak and, most importantly, to bring people together. Rest in peace and in power, Herman Wallace. The struggle continues." Then in an excerpt from an essay by Marame Kabe, it's written, "Herman Wallace would have turned 72 years old today. Instead, on October 4th, he died in his sleep, his body ravaged by liver cancer. Wallace had just left Louisiana prison 3 days earlier after having spent over 40 years in solitary confinement in a 6x9 cell. Among his final words, he is reported to have said, "I'm free. I'm free." It's a minor miracle that he was able to die surrounded by friends instead of in a prison hospital. A judge overturned his 1974 conviction for the murder of a guard at Angola Prison and ordered his immediate release only a couple of days later. While he lay dying in a hospital, the state of Louisiana filed charges to re-indict him. There was actually a question as to whether or not he might be rearrested. Louisiana was determined that Wallace should die in prison by any means necessary. Herman Wallace of the Angola 3.
A Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, with my co-host Cliff Stewart, Ethel Lopez, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. That was our exoneree moment. Herman Wallace of the Angola 3. Mr. Wallace just passed away a few days ago. They had his funeral this past weekend. On the phones, we have Jackie Sumel. Ms. Sumel, are you there?
I'm here, yeah. Sumel is my last name.
Say it again, please.
Sumel. Like, some will say you will, some will say you won't.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. So, Ms. Sumel, we want to thank you for joining us. Now, I understand that you're working on a special project regarding Herman Wallace. And give us a little information as far as the Angola 3 and then the project that you're working on, last request or something that Mr. Wallace had stated.
Sure. I mean, there's a lot of information to offer. The Angola 3 are collectively known for being targeted and framed by the Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola. In the early 1970s, they were organizers, Black Panthers. Robert King, Herman Wallace, and Albert Woodfox make up the Angola 3. In 2013, over 42 years later, both Herman Wallace and Robert King, two out of three of the Angola 3, had been released and had their convictions overturned. Albert Woodfox remains in solitary confinement in the state of Louisiana, contesting the same conviction as Herman Wallace and maintaining his innocence. I think what is significant, even more significant about the history of the Angola 3 is their endurance of solitary confinement, indefinite solitary confinement, 6-foot-by-9-foot cell, a minimum of 23 hours a day. Robert King endured 29 years of solitary confinement, 31 years of a wrongful conviction. Herman was 42 years of solitary confinement, 42 years of a wrongful conviction. And Albert remains in solitary at David Wade Correctional to this day.
Wow. And, you know, I'm just sitting here shaking my head. You know, this system, and you know, with the IRP case, it's actually made us to realize, we often say that we were naive to the system. Because, you know, you think that the system is designed one way and the process is supposed to go one way, and it doesn't. I mean, I was blown away even when I was reading Mr. Wallace's story, and today when I was doing the cut as far as for the... And here you have a dying man. A judge has overturned the case, and then you have the state trying to re-indict him, possibly re-arrest him, and he's dying. I mean, that I just can't fathom that.
Well, one of the things you have to remember is that the state is the defendant in a very large civil suit for cruel and unusual punishment, right? And one of the things that Herman, Robert, and Albert have maintained their integrity on is ending the use of long-term solitary confinement, not only in the state of Louisiana, but across the United States, right? The only thing that speaks to officials is money, right? The prison system itself is generated by money, right, by capital gains. You have this ongoing shift towards privatizing prisons, and in doing so, you have to guarantee a certain amount of a population, right? We have the United States has, we all know these facts and figures, but 5% of the world's population, 25% of the world's prison population, and then you have to compare that to still 5% of the world's population and 42% of the world's wealth, right? And one of the ways that we're able to maintain that is by creating a system where men, predominantly men of color, are forced to work for 2 to 20 cents an hour. And that's what you're looking at in the prison population. And this growth towards privatizing prisons requires that we maintain that population, right? We guarantee those who are willing to invest in our state, you know, be that Louisiana for me, the opportunity to maintain a population that's going to work for 2 to 20 cents an hour, which is, you know, a paradigm of slavery beyond a reasonable doubt. And so these were the teachings that Herman Wallace, Albert Wood Fox, Robert King, and many others, you know, and the system that they were challenging, the teachings that they were trying to provide, and the integrity that they maintained while maintaining their innocence throughout. And that's why they remain targeted to this day, and that's why the state reindicted him, right? Or is because they wanted to say, well, look, we're the defendants in this incredibly, incredibly long, lengthy, dense discussion about the history of race in a supposedly post-civil rights era in the United States. And this is what Herman Wallace's case is this incredible wound that when you open it up, you see that things haven't actually changed that much, right? They have not shifted. I mean, I would say they have not shifted at all, but they haven't shifted enough.
Well,
go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, Ms. Summel, statistics that you spoke of are borne out in what's going on in the West, in Arizona, the Papers, Please law. The gentleman who sponsored that law in the state legislation is known to be, he is on the board of a private prison company, you know. Mm-hmm. He, and in order for them to justify building the private prison there, they had to come up with a quota that the prison required. And so he came up with this Papers, Please law to incarcerate illegal immigrants.
And
you know what you have to understand is that, and I was saying this to a staff member of the show earlier today, motives have not changed, but means have. You know, the way they do things, or they just mask what their motives are. I mean, because if you go back and you look into your memory and you conjure up and you remember the images of Birmingham, Alabama, with the dogs and the rocks and the fire hoses and everything, and you look at the peripheral locations, and you look at the people standing around, those are young adults who are doing that to those children.
That's right. Hey, Jay, hold that thought. Ms. Summel, if you will stay with us. We just got a little liner we got to do.
If you love conservative internet radio as much as we do, then you already know about the Grit and Grace radio show. Jennifer Meadows and Josh been carrying the conservative message on the net for years, and now they're here on conservativenationmedia.com. Join Grit and Grace every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central for solid American patriotism, unapologetic commentary, the latest news, and conservative analysis with a good dose of plain old-fashioned fun. That's Grit and Grace every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central on Conservative Media, conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins.
You're tuned to A Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, with my co-hosts Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. On the phones, we have Jay Arrington, staff writer for the Maryland Daily Examiner. Joining us is Jackie Summel, and she is speaking to us about the Angola 3. Our exoneree moment tonight was about Herman Wallace. Ms. Summel, we have about a couple of minutes before we have a hard break. So I understand that one of the things that Mr. Wallace spoke about was dreaming of a home. Can you share with us about that?
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, Sam, one of the things that I think is really important, and I will say this is the first time I've ever been on a conservative talk show of any kind, you know, so I really appreciate you talking about these issues because I think it shows that this is a bipartisan concern, this idea of mass incarceration and the overuse of solitary confinement. I'm an artist.
You are.
And so
you are.
I'm an artist. What's that, honey? I didn't hear you.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was saying that I'm an artist, and so the tools that I'm using, again, they're bipartisan to talk about these issues is really just my art and my imagination, and I shared those tools with Herman in 2003. I asked him, what kind of house does a man who's lived in a 6-foot by 9-foot box then 30 years dream of, with the intention that it would provide him some sort of relief from 30 years of living in this parking space, right? And 10 years later, I'm trying to build his dream home in the state of Louisiana, the greatest incarcerator of the world, city of New Orleans, where Herman, Albert, and Robert all grew up.
Wow. Hey, we're going to go to this break, and when we come back, if you don't mind staying with us for just a few more minutes, we'd love to hear how folks can get in contact with you and find out more about that, to share a little bit more. You're tuned to A Just Cause Coast to Coast on Contact.com, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We'll be right back after these messages.
Molon LeVay Challenge Coins and Wares. Similar to challenge coins used by various military units, these MLCCW coins are ideal for anyone that champions the right to keep and bear arms by highlighting the Second Amendment and the Greek phrase Molon LeVay, which translated means come and take them. Come check out our pro-freedom, pro-liberty, and pro-Second Amendment coins and shirts at MLCCW.com. That's MLCCW.com.
There's hundreds of fun and simple things you and your family can do to live a healthier lifestyle. Here's 20 of them. Eat less. Eat slower. Eat smarter. Eat your fruits and veggies. Stop eating before you're full. Up your fiber. Lower your calories. Get off the bus early. Do some gardening. Do jumping jacks. Take the stairs. Take one, not two. Take on a new sport. Take a long walk home. Walk instead of drive. Bend. Stretch. Reach for the stars. Climb the monkey bars. Skip the fudge bars. Search We Can online to find more ways you and your family can get healthy together. A message from the Ad Council, HHS, and NIH's We Can program.
Chris, you're not acting like a grown-up in our relationship.
M2!
There's your comic book collection, the race car bed.
I'm young at heart, but I put money into my 401k every paycheck. I'm taking control over my financial life, and that feels pretty grown up to me.
Put away a few bucks, feel like $1 million. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's feedthepig.org. Are those footy pajamas?
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Every 20 seconds, another kid drops out of school.
If we do nothing, 3.5 million kids won't receive a diploma over the next 4 years. United Way knows that kids who have a caring adult in their life are more likely to make it. And the difference between a dropout and a graduate could be you. Take the pledge to volunteer now at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
The Internet's official rhino hunting safari.
A Just Cause Coast to Coast on conservatism.com. Bringing you education, awareness, and information of judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, along with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez on the phones. We have Jay Arrington with the Maryland Daily Examiner, and then our special guest, Ms. Jackie Sumrall, speaking about Herman Wallace of the Angola 3. Ms. Sumrall, thanks for joining us, and you were sharing with us about you being an artist and your conversation with Mr. Wallace a few years back. You could share that.
Yeah, I'm sorry you broke up. I'm not sure if you were asking me to elaborate a little bit on his house or
yes,
you wanted me to
yes.
talk about the project.
Yeah, the project.
I mean, Herman, you know, died a revolutionary. He died an innocent man in the eyes of the court and, of course, an innocent man in the eyes of all of his supporters. And I believe his dream home reflects that experience of maintaining his innocence from within the confines of 42 years of wrongful incarceration and solitary confinement. It's a really complex home with a simplistic frame, A-frame. It's shaped after his experience growing up in Louisiana. And one of the things is if you're going to bottled a human being or bottled a human doing in a 6-foot by 9-foot cell for 42 years. It works a little bit like a time capsule. So there's nuances that are reflective of the time when he was free, the 1970s, things like shag carpeting and, you know, lava lamps and things like that, that he goes into great detail about. But his revolutionary spirit shines throughout his house, and he has rooms for organizing. He has walls that are dedicated to abolitionists and other revolutionaries. He has, you know, a Black Panther in the middle of his swimming pool in the back. He's maintained his principles, and it shows through his house. And if you want to know more about the house, PBS is actually streaming the documentary made about this project called Herman's House for the rest of the month. It's online and free. And you can also check out my website, which is hermanshouse.org. And there's also the opportunity on my website to participate in building Herman's House as we kick off an even larger fundraising campaign.
That is an excellent work you're doing. And, you know, we are honored that we were able to make Mr. Wallace part of the honoree, exoneree moment for the program tonight. And, you know, a sad story as far as the way things have transpired. But, you know, the fact that you are out there fighting for righting the wrongs, that's what A Just Cause is about. That's why we're fighting so hard for the IRE6. We're getting calls and emails all the time about other situations very similar to this. And, you know, it's going to be efforts of the Jackie Sumwells of the world, the AJCs of the world, and, you know, the Jay Arringtons and so forth to continue to push this story out there. And again, you know, we want to thank you for joining the program and being with us tonight. Do you have any other words you'd like to share with us before you leave us tonight?
I would. I mean, I think one of the things that you're highlighting with your program and talking about the IRC6 and Herman Wallace and countless others who are wrongfully convicted is a quote that that I remember from when I was in high school, and it came out during the time of Nazi Germany, during the reign of Nazi Germany, and I will paraphrase it, but it was spoken that first they came for the Jews, but I wasn't Jewish, so I didn't say anything. Then they came for the gays, but I wasn't gay, so I didn't say anything. Then they came for the women, but I wasn't a woman, so I didn't say anything. And now they're coming for me, and there's no one else to stand up for me, right? And I think that's what we're looking at across the board in the United States when it comes to mass incarceration, is that they're reaching into these communities and they're robbing them of resources. They're robbing them of the paradigms of family. And then they're moving into further and further into other communities. So it's not just a Black issue. It's not just a Latino issue. It's not just a poor issue. It's across the board, and we need to stand up and speak for others.
And, you know, when you were just talking, it came to mind, you know, the quote from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. that basically says, you know, injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere. And then I also like a quote from Bishop Desmond Tutu, who says that if you remain neutral of injustice, you've sided with the oppressor. And so, you know, what you just said, you know, kind of, I like to kind of wrap those quotes around there because of the fact that if we bury our head in the sand and pretend as though nothing is going on, you can leave your head in the sand and someone is going to come right along and you are going to find yourself subjected to the same thing. So, you know, you can pretend as though it's not happening. It's happening all around you every day, and folks need to get involved. They need to participate in the process. They need to be sure that their voices are heard.
That's correct.
Absolutely.
Again, thank you for joining us tonight, Ms. Sumwell. And give that website again and the PBS information, if there's any phone number that you'd like to share, and then we'll let you go, and then we'll kind of start to wrap things up here as well.
Thank you. It's hermanshouse.org is the website to participate in the collective shift to end solitary confinement and get involved in building Herman's dream home. And then pbs.org is streaming the documentary film, also called Herman's House, for the rest of the month in order to honor Herman's legacy.
Sumwell, working on Herman's House, honoring Herman Wallace of the Angola 3. Thank you, Ms. Samuel, for joining us. Okay. Thank you very much. Have a good evening. Back to the to Jay. Jay, on next week, we're going to be talking a little bit more about the indictment process. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Ted Stevens case. We're going to, you know, obviously we cannot ignore that transcript. I mean, I'm excited to see what's going to result of this thing. I mean, like I said, what we started the show tonight a couple of hours ago, about an hour into it, we 111,000 impressions, and it's only been out there for 5 days. And, you know, one other thing that we're doing too, Jay, I'd like to put a call out to attorneys. You know, if an attorney is out there, or several attorneys, would like to find out more information about the IRP 6 case, you can give us a call at A Just Cause at 855-529-4252, 855-529-4252. And the reason I put that call out is because we're looking we're getting ready to do an amicus brief. And basically an amicus brief is where, you know, attorneys, they write a brief in another court, and they're looking at a situation and saying that this is not right. And so they will write a brief to the court and express their opinion based on case law and so forth. And so, you know, obviously in this situation, we still have the IRP 6 appeal that's pending, and there are several things that's under appeal: the Fifth Amendment violation, the speedy trial violation, expert witnesses not being allowed. One of the things that you talked about, Jay, as far as forensic evidence not being allowed. So we will explore this case, as I stated earlier, as a case study. We will also look at other cases under exoneree moment. And then we will bring a segment as far as, you know, talking about misjustice or injustice and wrongful convictions and so forth that's in the news each week. So, Jay, some closing words from you. What you're going to be bringing up as far as in your next series on the Maryland Daily Examiner. And I got about a minute or so. So go ahead.
Well, I just want to say again, you know, what we've been talking about tonight is just another example of why we shouldn't wait to become prisoners before we cry freedom. You know, there's a saying, Ella Wilcox said years ago, to stand in silence when you should protest makes cowards of men. So we have to fight for freedom while we have freedom, because it's virtually impossible to fight for once you become a slave or incarcerated.
That's right.
Unless you have soldiers like we're trying to do here. But again, my next article is going to focus on the indictment process, and one of the things I'm going to I'm going to highlight in here is the portion of the indictment in the first couple of paragraphs that says IRP defendants induced staffing companies to enter into arrangements by making false representations about impending contracts with one or more large government agencies, which is blown out of the water by Cala Forensics, Mr. Gvilfer, saying that they actually did have a viable product. So that shouldn't have gone any further than that right there. That blew that right out of the water. So anyway, but that's what I'm going to be talking about. And again, Ethel, Cliff, and Sam, I thank you for the opportunity to speak with you all tonight. And any time that you you need me to come on the show, you know how to get in touch with me. Look for the article Thursday at MarylandDailyExaminer.com. And, you know, keep the fight going, and keep a good thought about what we're about to accomplish, because it is inevitable.
Hey,
that
Jay.
We are going. Yes.
Yeah, Jay, thanks for hanging out.
Thanks
for hanging out with us tonight. We really appreciate what you're doing. We appreciate the coverage that you're providing for the IRP 6 on the East Coast. And, you know, it's folks like you that are going to help make bring about change, and we just appreciate you hanging out with us. Ethel, we have a phone call campaign going on. General Eric Holder's office, you want to give out that number and what we're doing there real quick?
Absolutely. Please call Eric Holder's number, 202-514-2003. Please call him and just tell him investigate the case of the IRP 6. Thank you so much, Jay.
All right. So, again, the website for justcause.com is a-justcause.com, www.a-justcause.com. We also have a website. They're laughing at me. We also have a website set up for And it's www.freetheirp6.org. You can go out there and get all kinds of information about the IRP6 case. You can get the latest information about the transcript and the motion that's been filed as far as part of the lawsuit. You can also call a Just Cause at 855-529-4252. 855-529-4252.
Okay.
A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education about judicial injustice. Two of my most favorite people to hang out with a couple hours each week. Cliff, Ethel, we'll do this all over again right here on conservativenationmedia.com next week.
We'll be here.
Hey, thank you for tuning in, everybody.
We want to say thanks to our engineering team, K&D Productions, Hill Girl, always there for us. We appreciate it. Talk to you guys.